From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 21st day of September 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Boster, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, the Speaker of the House has moved the Farm Bill legislation to the lame duck session agenda that comes up after the election. German-owned BASF plans to buy a U.S. crop protection technology company, and a Russian official believes his nation may yet limit the export of grain this fall. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories as we make our way through this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago, on a Friday afternoon, futures finished the day mixed. The nearby contract for the soft red winter wheat was up 17 and three quarters today, settled at $8.97 and a quarter. The March at 9.08, up 16 and a half cents. And next year's July at 8.71 and a half, up 8 and a quarter on the day. The hard red in Kansas City at 8.94 and a half finished a quarter of a cent higher. December corn futures for the afternoon, 7.46 and a quarter, up a quarter. March at 7.51, a penny and a half higher. In the May at 7.51, up 2 and a half. July futures 744, 2 cents higher. September corn 688, or rather 668, up 3. And December corn at 641 and a half, up 1 and a quarter for next year. Soybeans now, November contract $16.17, down a penny and three quarters. January at 1617, three quarters lower. The March at 1581 and a half, up 5 and three quarters, and soybeans in the May contract at 1528. We're 8 cents higher on the afternoon. July futures at 1511, up 10 and a quarter. Next year's November at 1352, up 13 cents for the day. Bean meal futures 310 higher at 485.40, and bean oil at 54.45, down 18 on the afternoon. Live cattle futures finished the October at 125.52 and a half, down 22 and a half, but the December's were up 32 and a half at 128.47 and a half, and the October feeder cattle were 50 cents higher at 147.22 and a half. Lean hogs now, December contract $74.97 and a half cents, up 77 and a half cents. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil futures trading November at $93.06 a barrel, up 64 cents. The RBOB, or wholesale price of gasoline, at 294 and 6 tenths. That's up 4 and 2 tenths. And ethanol at 226 and 4 tenths, a penny and 7 tenths higher. The difference between the two, 68 and 3 tenths of a cent to the positive side for the use of ethanol. And that spread gained 2 and 6 tenths today. Natural gas at 288 and 9 tenths, up 9 and 2 tenths for the day. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.12 and 7 tenths, up 2 and 9 tenths as well. And the gold futures on the afternoon in the October at $1,775.60 an ounce, up $7.80. The U.S. dollar down 0.08. That's at 79.32 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Showers are likely, possibly a thunderstorm or two, mostly cloudy, a high near 70 degrees with a southeast wind at 6 to 8 miles per hour. And then for tonight, a chance of showers. And those will come mostly before 1 a.m. It'll be cloudy, a low 46. Tomorrow, 20% chance of showers before 1 in the afternoon. Mostly sunny skies, a high near 61. Northwest winds at 7 to 12 miles an hour tomorrow. They'll increase to 13 to 18 by the time the afternoon rolls around and could gust all the way to 28 tomorrow afternoon. And then Saturday evening, mostly clear skies, a low of 37 on a northwest wind at 8 miles an hour. Sunday, sunny skies and 61. Northwest wind at 6 to 10. Sunday night, mostly clear and a low of 37 degrees. On Monday, sunny skies and 67. Monday night, partly cloudy and 51. Tuesday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Mostly sunny, though. A high of 74. Tuesday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms and mostly cloudy. A low of 57. Wednesday, showers and thunderstorms, and then sunny, a high of 75 degrees. More on the weather when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is the 21st day of September. On the phone line with us, as usual for a Friday afternoon, Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I am doing really well on this Friday afternoon. The Cattle on Feed report, let's start there, was released at 2 o'clock Central Time by USDA. What did the number show?
Placed 89%, Todd, against 94% expected. Marketings, 95% compared with 98.4 expected. And then on feed, September 1, 99% compared with 99.9 expected. Pretty clear cut between the placed and the marketings. Pretty bearish, the feeders, and pretty friendly, the fat cattle. And turning over to the cold storage report, for frozen beef, we were about even with August of 2011. We actually drew down beef supplies this last month by almost 7%, so another nice number for the live cattle. So they, I think, probably have plenty of discount in them. They had been trading a lot like beans this week and a lot like crude oil this past week, where they've been taking a lot of premium out of the market, expecting lower demand. So hopefully we found a near-term low for the December fat cattle at this point.
Mm-hmm. Turn your attention to the grains direct straight up, and let's talk about next Friday's stocks report released at 7:30 a.m. It'll be a big one, the last one of the 2011-12 year.
Right.
So that will be for the harvest of last fall. What do you think it'll show?
Market has dialed in a pretty bearish report for the corn, especially just because of the WASDE numbers and that 1.2 billion bushels of extra new crop corn being pushed forward, and USDA saying on a media publication, either yesterday or today, I didn't know what date it was, but I had seen it at my desk, that in a media publication they had said this report will need to reflect what they did in the WASDE report this past week and a half ago. So I think the trade's geared up and ramped up for a bearish report when it comes to the corn. I don't think they know what to think for the beans. I think they're probably, if there's a chance for the beans to find any stability and some short covering and consolidation, if the meal market can stop bleeding red, I think the beans may have a chance to see a little bit of that short covering and consolidation and price firmness, because it will probably show a pretty low bean number on next Friday's numbers, is my guess.
How low did the beans trade today?
We got down in the November beans down to 1607.5, and also the January beans also 1607.5, and meal got down to some pretty key retracement levels. The continuation chart on the daily basis got down very close to the 50-day moving average. Some of these levels we really haven't tested or looked at testing since the spring, early summer time period. So we're really down there on some critical levels on a daily basis. We gave up our June 2008 highs on both corn and beans earlier this week, so that puts the weekly charts into a sell signal from a standpoint of not just the stochastics, but also the previous highs.
Of course, the September crop progress report would not have shown that big rainfall from Isaac that came in, and I guess maybe, although I'm thinking we're hearing the better beans from places where that rain may not have fallen, in Iowa and Minnesota, that the people think that the beans are better than they are, or is it, and maybe I'm thinking about this the other way around, is it that they were just that good to begin with, and Isaac won't have made a difference in Indiana, Illinois, and those places that it did fall?
No, I agree with your former statement. I think the trade, I had heard the trade thinking it was better than expected, especially in the Western Corn Belt, but I just literally got off the phone with someone down near Paris, and we were talking, and it's the same conversation I've had all week. They can get in, they're too tough, and they just pull right back out again and go back to corn if they have any corn left. So I would say in the heart of the drought area, it's just too early to tell whether the yields are better. But if you were in the Western Belt, if you were in the Northern Belt, if you were around the Muncie, Indiana area, Fort Wayne, Indiana area, early beans are coming in better than expected, but they're better than expected because they got those Ring of Fire rains. And I would only say, Todd, at the end of this week, the first thing I looked at when I came in today was to see how the crude oil and the S&P 500 were doing to give me an indication of how the beans and the soy complex would probably finish up, because we've had this negative Asian market mindset. Vegetable oils have been in just a terrible look in Asia all week. Palm oil hit an 11-month low this morning before the daytime session opened up for us here. But crude oil's down 10% for the week. So if I need to attach anything to the reason the beans traded, maybe 70-80% of the reason why the beans traded as bad as they did this week, to me it's not just the technicals. It also goes back to the crude oil and the way it's been trading and the close relationship it has with the S&P 500 and the soybeans, and those three working very well together ever since the financial crisis.
Do you suppose they will continue to track together again next week?
I do, because one of the things that I really enjoyed seeing was in the Wall Street Journal today, investors into emerging market funds, they put $4.3 billion into emerging market equity funds this past week. That doesn't sound like much, but that compares to $447 million the prior week. So you essentially had a tenfold or a hundredfold increase in how much money the emerging market funds acquired in 1 week's time. Why is that? Well, it's directly correlated to the quantitative easing. So with all this central bank money in the market now and more coming in into the fourth quarter, I think they're going to be very tightly interwoven.
Mm-hmm. Well, explain to me what that means.
Well, what I mean is I think the S&P, the crude, and the soybeans will continue to be highly correlated,
right,
and that if the S&P 500 decides to take a big, sharp move to the downside, don't be surprised if the crude oil and the beans follow suit.
I guess that was the relationship I was looking for, was not the S&P to the soybeans, because you were telling us that was correlated, but the quantitative easing to the S&P, and I suppose you're of a mindset that maybe it might cause it to dive?
Yeah, I think this is where all three of them, I think, have been inflated due to investor fund money flows. And, you know, we saw the Brazilian finance minister come out today and say we're going to fight, essentially say we're going to fight quantitative easing in the United States with every tooth and nail that we have. Why is that? Because they don't want any more inflationary pressure. 2 years ago, they loved this because they didn't have any inflation and they wanted to rebuild their economy as well. But now they've got a slowing economy and too high of an inflation. They can't do anything, and the Chinese can't do anything domestically, or they're going to stoke their inflation. So when we do something, they're worried we're just going to ship our inflationary pressure over to them. So it comes back to the currency markets. It comes back to the interest rate markets and the bond markets. And where does that money go? And it typically gets into the commodities, soybeans, the S&P, and crude. I think that's why they're so tightly correlated.
Well, we've had a pretty good drop in both the corn and the soybeans.
Yeah.
Will there be a bounce anytime soon?
Well, I think it's going to have to be bean led. I think that's what the supply-demand numbers have said this
mm-hmm.
week. When you sell 2.8 million bushels of corn on a weekly export, but then you beat estimates in the meal and the bean oil, and you get to the top end of the estimates on the beans, and you see meal flying out to Taiwan, and you see beans flying out to South Korea, I think it's pretty safe to say, and you've got weather more on your side in beans in South America than the corn, I think it's fairly safe to say that if you want the corn to go higher, you just have to have the beans on your side. And corn got a really nice break this week from a standpoint of not having to go down as hard as beans, mainly because of the wheat market and the fact that not only do you have that dry southern plains weather, but you're back on this issue of whether the Russians are going to kill their exports because the prices are getting high enough. I was very intrigued to see that the wheat corn spread got to the highest level it's been since February of 2011, and at the exact same time we saw Decatur, Illinois basis for corn in the heart of the drought hit a new six-month low. So when you see extremes like that, it says to me corn doesn't have its own fundamentals to rely upon. If we're going to bottom or find some consolidation or firmness next week, since we've had the wheat rally this week, I put it all on the feet of the beans, and if they can't do it, I think corn has a tough week next week.
Yeah, actually, we had a wheat rally this week,
yeah.
but it was not that way all week long.
No,
it was pretty weak, pretty hard.
Closed 35 cents off the lows, but still lower on the week. It felt great after Tuesday.
Well, yeah, you know, and then, but you look at the July of next year, and it's got a really nice hookup in it.
It does.
Yeah, for the weekly trade.
This is the window of opportunity, I think, and this is where Informa's numbers come in, where they're essentially saying, look, 1.1 million more acres of wheat, 1.1 million more acres of corn, 3.8 million more acres of beans, 6 million more acres between the three, whether it's because of crop insurance prices, whether it's because of the way the historicals play out with higher wheat acres and that translating into more corn and bean acres. Who knows this early on, but it essentially says unless you stay dry in the southern plains and you have the Europeans run out of wheat, this is kind of the red zone for new crop wheat to get those hedges started. So I still like that 9, 9.25, but I'm going to have to bring down my targets at the end of this month if I can't get what I want. And that's probably where the stocks report may be, make it the most vulnerable to the wheat, because we haven't been selling a lot of wheat. It's been really coming out of Europe and the Black Sea at this point. So that's probably where maybe the stocks report will mean a lot more at the end of the week as far as how the wheat price goes.
Yeah, you have a good weekend.
Okay, thanks, Todd.
Mm-hmm. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media. This is the Closing Market Report. You can find us online at willag.org. Now here's Dave Dickey, your Director of Ag Programming, with today's newscast.
In agricultural news, U.S. House Speaker John Boehner yesterday moved the farm bill onto the agenda of the lame duck session after the presidential election in November. Boehner told reporters that the House would, quote, deal with the farm bill after the election. The 2008 farm bill expires on September 30th, but farmers will not notice any major impacts until at least January. Senate Agriculture Committee Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow held a teleconference with reporters Thursday afternoon to criticize the lack of action in the House. She said the farm bill will be her focus and priority after the election. Republicans in the House remain divided largely over nutrition cuts in the farm bill, though some members of both parties also want steeper cuts in commodity programs and possibly crop insurance as well. Falling into the lame duck session, the farm bill will compete for attention and floor time with a battle over the so-called fiscal cliff. Congress will have to deal with extending or changing the Bush-era tax cuts, as well as try to address cuts to the military. German chemicals company BASF-SE agreed to acquire U.S. crop technology company Becker Underwood for 785 million euros, that's $1.02 billion, in a deal that would continue consolidation in the seed treatment market. The deal would bolster BASF's existing business in crop protection, including chemical coatings and other treatments applied to seeds before they are planted to protect crops from pests and other harm. The World Trade Organization is cutting its estimate for growth in global trade for this year and next. The WTO lowered the 2012 forecast to 2.5% growth from 3.7% growth. The outlook for 2013 was reduced to 4.5% from 5.6%. Darden Restaurants Incorporated today says that its fiscal first quarter net income rose 4%. For the 3 months ending August 26th, the company said it earned $110.8 million, or 85 cents per share. That's compared with $106.6 million, or 78 cents per share a year ago. Darden Restaurants own Olive Garden, Red Lobster, and Longhorn Steakhouse brands. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Both programs you can find on our website. That second one, Commodity Week, will record about 4:30 this afternoon. Our panelists in studio will include Jackie Vakes, Bill Mayer, and Bill Gentry. Bill Lapp will be our guest. That's kind of the first time I realized I had three Bills on the program. Hey, three Bills, that's, we'll talk about three Bills when we get to fun driving a bit later. Not this week, but sometime in October. You'll hear about that more later. Commodity Week. It's a great program. Be sure you tune it in tomorrow morning at 11:30 Central Time on our home station, WILL. Airs at 6 a.m. as well. And on many of our other affiliate radio stations, always can find it on our website at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. Now, you've heard me say it a number of times over the years and several times this week that it's a good time during the Closing Market Report to shut down the combine and take a nap. If you want proof, it comes up next. Those of us that work a regular job expect a coffee break in the morning and the afternoon. There's a good reason why. Research shows it makes us more productive and more alert. The same research can be applied to farmers and farm workers, says University of Illinois Extension farm safety specialist Baba Heron.
Yeah, it's important. Research shows us that every 2 to 2.5 hours of continuous work, even if that's operating a combine or tractor, we should stop for 10 or 15 minutes to take a break. What that does is it relieves us of the stress and focus of what we're doing, even if it might be kind of monotonous at times. And it makes when we go back, we're more mentally alert, less mentally fatigued, and much less likely to make a mistake that results in injuries. And our data shows that we have big peaks in injuries mid-morning and mid to late afternoon after people have been working continuous hours and not stopping for any, for a little break.
Heron says much of the time it's important for others around the farm to remind workers to take a little break and to shut down the machinery. A little mid-morning snack, a little afternoon nap might just be a good thing.
At least a snack would be good. A nap would be nice. I know a lot of farmers, that might be challenging for them. But even if they went and ate lunch and slept for 15 or 20 minutes, that alone amazingly increases our alertness and dramatically decreases having an accident. If we have an accident, it's, an average accident, our estimate cost us about $25,000 to $30,000 in medical costs, downtime, lost productivity, those sorts of things. And if it's a fatality, it goes up to over $1 million. You look at lost productivity and those sorts of issues, as well as the direct cost of the death itself. And so it's important in managing risk that we understand how to manage ourselves to minimize those risks.
The message is clear and simple for the harvest season. Operator downtime pays because there are fewer errors, injuries, and even deaths when a body is well rested. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. Of course, you can find us online at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. Commodity Week will be posted by about 6 o'clock this evening. Our guest this week is Bill Lapp. He's from Omaha, Nebraska. On the phone line with us at this point this afternoon, Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, to look at the cash grain market. Thanks, Bill or Bruce, for being with us. Tell me how busy you are today.
Steady. It varies a lot between locations. I get to the south end, like Ludlow, we're probably 2/3, maybe a little bit more done with corn. Got our first bean load in. And I get north along 24, and they're more in the 50% range. A little wetter up there, so there we're running into butting heads with drier capacity.
And your expectations for corn harvest to ramp down and beans to ramp up next week for them to change out or not?
Next week, maybe the week after. I went back and looked at some historical numbers, and the 29th is the latest we've run for years as far as a really big bean day, our first big bean day, and I'm skeptical if we'll see that this year.
All right, and very quickly, your bids.
758 on nearby corn and 1614 on soybeans.
Thanks so much. That's Bruce Bostard. Back in 2 minutes.
It's National Pecan Cookie Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1756, John McAdam was born. He invented macadam pavement for roads. In 1816, as surveyor to the Bristol Turnpike Trust,
He remade their roads with a raised carriageway to improve drainage. Stones were graded and laid in three levels, with the smallest stones crushed and laid as a top surface. By the way, the macadamia nut was named for him. In 1921, a huge explosion at a fertilizer factory in Germany caused 500 deaths. The fertilizer was a 50-50 mix of ammonium nitrate and ammonium sulfate, which together had a tendency to clump. It was routine to use dynamite and bulldozers to break up the clumped fertilizer, but this time the TNT set off an explosion of 4,500 tons of fertilizer, which created a crater 250 feet in diameter and 50 feet deep. In 1961, Earl Dixon died. His wife had frequent kitchen accidents, cutting or burning herself. Dixon devised a way that she could easily apply her own dressings. He prepared ready-made bandages by placing squares of cotton gauze at intervals along an adhesive strip. Dixon worked at Johnson & Johnson as a cotton buyer, and his home idea led to the mass production of Band-Aids. And that's this day in agricultural history.
It's a Friday afternoon. This is the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. On the phone line is Jim Angel, Illinois State Climatologist, located at the Water Surveyor in the Prairie Research Institute right here on campus. Thanks, Jim, for taking the time with us this afternoon.
You're welcome.
Well, a couple of things we probably ought to go through. Let's start with yesterday's reports that came out on the long range from the National Weather Service. It was the third Thursday of the month.
That's right. They came out with their new batch of monthly and seasonal outlooks, and for the month of October, they have us in an increased risk of above-normal temperatures and below-normal precipitation. And then for the period of October, November, and December, they've got us in an increased risk of above-normal temperatures as well. So it kind of looks like they're expecting that trend of warmer than normal temperatures or average temperatures to continue throughout the rest of this year. And if you peek at their outlook for December, January, and February, while they haven't really rolled out their official winter forecast yet, if you look at those, they also show an increased chance of above normal temperatures.
And that far out, what do they say about precip? Anything?
Well, they don't say anything for the fall months. They're fairly neutral on their forecast there, saying nothing in particular. But for the winter months of December, January, and February, they do have us with an increased chance of below-normal precipitation. So that was kind of the scenario we worked with last winter, as you may recall, with warm temperatures and not as much precipitation. That certainly got us in trouble this year. So hopefully things won't play out again like that.
It made for a really nice winter, though.
It did.
You know, be careful what you ask for, I suppose.
That's right.
Hey, speaking of rainfall, looks like we won't have a whole lot next week, but there is some in the cast for this afternoon and this evening, yeah?
That's right. We still have a 60% chance tonight and this afternoon and tonight, according to the National Weather Service, and there are some showers lurking to the north and east of us right now, and even to the west of us as well. So we're kind of surrounded by them. So we've got a pretty good shot. It does not look like the amounts will be that large, probably about a half an inch or so. They're not real big rainfall deliverers, but we might get a little wet there. Tomorrow it looks maybe a slight chance early in the morning. Then by the evening, it'll clear off and be fairly cool Saturday night with lows 37, and then warm back up a little bit on Sunday and Monday and Tuesday with highs in the 60s and very pleasant, lots of sunshine. And so it'll feel very much like early fall at that point.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Jim Angel is the Illinois State climatologist located at the Water Survey Prairie Research Institute right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can hear his forecast again on our website at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. There you'll find our program called Commodity Week, a weekly look at the marketplace as well. We'll record at 4:30 this afternoon and post at about 6 o'clock this evening, Commodity Week, our weekly look at what happened in the world of agriculture. Be safe on the combine during this harvest season, and if you're just out and about driving in the countryside, consider them the right of way. You get out of their way because they're moving really slow. They're not going to move around nearly as fast as you, so be careful with them out there. Have a great weekend.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.